with Devon Gibbons. Joe Torti here with you, 97.5. The Fanatic. Hey, the Phillies made the ticker, D. Phillies fire manager Gabe Kapler after two seasons.
You don't say.
Wow. Yes!
You don't say.
Tyler, I forgot to ask you about this. Are you happy about this? The yes, Gabe Kapler's fired?
Yes, I am. And here's the thing. You know, Mike's call earlier had a little bit of validity to it. I think he was a little bit of a fall guy. But he micromanaged this team poorly.
Yeah.
And Klentak macromanaged this team poorly. I didn't learn a lot in stat, but I know what those two things mean. And so he's not the only one to blame, but he is to blame.
Is he the main one to blame, though?
No, probably not. No, because you can only do what you can do with a team. And we talked about, you know, gaining and losing wins. He probably cost the team 3 or 4 wins this year. But 3 or 4 wins at 85 doesn't get you into the playoffs.
Right. He's in third place, in my opinion.
Third
place, in my opinion.
See, I have him at 2. Because this thing falls squarely on the shoulders of Matt Klentak.
Who is number 2 on this list.
Who's number 1?
Andy McPhail. I know that people roll their eyes because they don't know what Andy McPhail does. In my opinion, from what I've seen,
okay,
Andy McPhail sets the tone for the team, uh-huh, for the organization, what it's going to be, right?
Yes.
And the things that I have heard, you know, I'm not excited to go play the I don't want to make a playoff series against the Dodgers. One fireable offense for just crushing morale. And then the second one was, obviously, if we make it, we make it. If we don't, we don't.
Like, that was really bad.
Really, really brutal. So Matt Klentak, in my opinion, tried to do a good job this offseason. Now, we've talked about it before where fan opinion doesn't matter about a GM. Like, we can think you did a great job, if the team stinks, you did a bad job. And it's not, oh, who could have said that? It's, you're supposed to know better than we do.
Correct,
right?
Correct.
If that is the mandate from above, from Andy McPhail, why is Matt Klentak turning over every stone to try to figure out where he can get pitching gems and where he can make things work? And there will be consequences if this team doesn't make the playoffs.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So even though I would argue that Klentak is more directly responsible for the team's failures, as Tyler said, because the personnel is not there, the impetus wasn't on him to get these players, because I would argue that from the top, there's not enough of a winning culture, winning pressure coming down.
I will not disagree with that at all. You and Tyler are both right. No one's wrong here in this situation.
Right, yeah.
And that's bad.
Right, yeah.
That is bad.
The fact that we can't point and be like, no, that guy's doing his job. Like,
That's bad.
That's really bad.
The order is what the order is. It is. Tyler has Klentak number 2. Gabe Kapler number 2. You have Klentak
number 3.
Number 3.
I want to know where Andy McPhail ranks in Tyler's list, or if he doesn't.
Number 3.
Just inconsequential.
He's number 3?
No, I don't think he's number... That's difficult to me, because Klentak is so clearly number 1 to me,
mm-hmm,
that I think McPhail has to be attached at some point. But to me, you could say that they went and upgraded the lineup, and they did, for what it's worth, upgraded the bullpen. You're not expecting David Robertson to get hurt. You're not expecting Pat Neshek to get hurt. All of these things. They did what they needed to do. But the most egregious mistake that they've made was 100% miscalculating the starting rotation, which stunk to begin with, and it stunk at the end of the year, and there's like a shock value as to why it stunk in the middle of the season.
I don't have a problem with them thinking that their young pitchers are going to be better.
I don't. I don't have a problem with that.
My problem is, if you're going to be a team, like, do you think the Yankees are ever like, we're good on bullpen? You know what I mean? We don't need to upgrade bullpen. Do you think good teams are ever like, there are talented players out there, we're good? Like, that's my problem. Even if you thought they were going to take a step forward, all three of them, even if you thought Velasquez and Eflin and Pivetta were all going to take steps forward, you don't get Keuchel just because?
You do it just because.
The Astros let Charlie Morton walk and at the deadline traded for Zach Greinke.
Right.
That's all you need to know. They're the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
Yes.
You do it
just because.
You upgrade just because. You don't know if you're going to be playing against that guy. You don't know if you have an injury. And you don't know if this guy's better than your guy.
You acquire talent because it's available.
Because. Just because. Just you because. Do it. If you're a serious team, you do it.
And you figure everything else out. That's it. Period.
Did the Eagles need J.J.?
No.
Probably not, absolutely. But they got him anyway.
No. Just because.
Because he was available. It was like, oh, really? Okay, we can figure this out with LeGarrette Blount and Corey Clement, who's developing himself into something. We can figure this out. Now, you can argue that they needed him simply because Wendell Smallwood wasn't good enough.
Right.
And they weren't really ready, not knowing exactly who Corey Clement was.
You want the Blount Ajayi rotation more than you want the Blount anybody else rotation.
Right, yeah. And to your point, you have Nola, you have Jake Arrieta. What do you have after? Let's see if you have some of these younger players that can develop, as you're talking about. So, okay.
Maybe they do. But maybe then Keuchel only costs you money.
But guess what? While you still want to develop those players, maybe they can learn something from one of those, that pitcher that you brought in.
And you don't have any lefties.
And you don't have any lefties.
Right?
It's so glaring, isn't it?
How do you not have any lefties in a major glaring. League rotation?
So glaring.
None.
Zero.
Oh, gosh. That's the thing. So, I don't know. I don't know if Klentak would have more aggressively explored options if there were a mandate from above. But, I mean, John Middleton's out there saying that you're going to spend stupid money. What else do you need? Like, what else do you need to hear?
Yeah, and when you say stupid money and you spend the amount that you spend on Harper.
Yes.
That doesn't mean it has to stop there if something else becomes available. Like you said, with the talent level, which is that particular pitcher, you go out there and you do it, even though you did spend a semblance of stupid money already. Keep it going.
Well,
it doesn't stop. 350 is stupid. How about 365 is stupid?
Right.
Because now you're adding on that extra $15 million to the 350 that you already gave up.
Sure.
Come on.
And the problem
is stupid.
We talked about the identity issue. To me, being like, we're going to maybe spend a little bit stupid money means that, like, hey, we're in a big market. We're finally going to start spending like a big market team. Let's be in the top five or six in payroll if it means our team's going to be that good.
Correct.
It's a big, big issue that I have. And
how far away are they? They ended up in fourth place.
It seems like far, doesn't it?
Now, New York did fire their manager. But
it looks like they got stuff.
They can bring in someone who makes that team better.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they got Alonso. you know what I mean? Like,
my goodness.
They got some stuff over there.
The Phillies don't have one of those that's their own?
Nobody homegrown. Rhys Hoskins still might be a player.
He might be.
I don't think he's any kind of like mega star.
No.
That was my worst take of the year in any sport, he's going to be the MVP.
Yeah, well. I forgot you said that.
Worst take of the year. Oh, yeah. I won't let anybody forget.
Yeah.
My bad takes.
I looked at that situation with him, and I always said, all right, I like this guy. He's good. I don't see everything that everyone, like the MVP thing. Yeah. I just didn't see it.
Right. Well, you were right.
I don't know why, and I don't know who it was earlier. I think it was Andrew Sauchunas said he's Pat Burrell.
Yeah, I heard that today.
He might be Pat Burrell. He might be Pat Burrell.
Which there's nothing wrong with.
No.
But Pat Burrell's a supplemental piece. He's not a star.
You have Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins, and Chase Utley. Plus, you have pitching. And a good manager.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the 08 team didn't have any pitching. Well, they had a dominant Cole Hamels.
They had a dominant Cole Hamels. They had a bullpen that the rotation was set. Everyone was available, and it worked.
So you like roles in bullpens.
I don't mind it.
Okay.
I don't mind.
I don't know if it's a thing anymore. That's the only thing.
That's what I'm saying. I don't mind it. We know it worked in the past. It's a new day. So things are changing and things are different and players come out sooner. So you have so many different players that you have to go to different guys on any given night. And there's so many games you have to adjust. But roles are roles. Sometimes you have to, again, go back to some of the things that just simply you know what baseball is, and you go back to the game and not look at the analytic and the numbers part of it.
I would have loved the Phillies to just keep swinging and just try to get everybody.
Just get them all.
I know that you weren't going to be able to get Machado and Harper, right? I'm not that crazy.
But
I understand.
Give it a shot. Remember that was a thing, though?
Yeah, maybe.
That was the
maybe
thing.
You could do that.
That was the thing.
My favorite transaction in recent memories, one that didn't happen.
Okay.
And I know that it's in vogue for people to just crap on the Los Angeles Rams, but I loved the fact that they were so ridiculously salary cap strapped, and they were insane in their pursuit of Khalil Mack.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I thought that that
Detroit?
Was...
Yes.
I thought that that was like the clearest case of, it doesn't matter that you're good. Like, you're trying to make it embarrassing. Yes. Like, how good you... Like,
we want to destroy the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
We're going to get Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out later.
You figure out how to make it work later. That's exactly... And that is what elite teams do. That's why I was disappointed by the Phillies' approach. Even if you thought that the pitchers were going to take a step forward, you do what you can.
Yes.
You just get talent where you can get it.
I totally agree.
Speaking of getting that talent where you can get it, this is going to be very exciting, friends, as we go down the 2017 draft, which is the gift that keeps on giving. It seems like every single night we look at this particular draft.
We might have a new audience. Let's give it to them.
We're talking about the wide receivers this time. Normally, we're talking about the running backs, where literally the Eagles got the only bad running back in the draft or out of the draft. As a reminder, Chris Carson and Matt Breida were both undrafted. In that one, you ended up with Donnell Pumphrey. Very exciting.
Corey Clement as well.
Corey Clement? Yeah, that's true. Better than Donnell Pumphrey.
Better than Donnell Pumphrey.
Okay. So, as a reminder, the Eagles picked at 16 for Derek Barnett, right?
Yes.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
And then I don't remember the number of the Sidney Jones selection. Do we remember the number of the Sidney Jones selection?
42.
Feels like we're playing a game show. Yeah, come on down. You're the next contestant on the Eagles missed a draft pick.
Yes. 43. You were right on it. Okay. You were right on it. Okay.
Okay. Dalvin Cook was 41 or 40?
I thought he was 41. I thought.
Okay. I believe he went up to 41.
Traded up two spots.
They traded up to go. No, they jumped the Eagles to get him.
That's what I'm saying. Traded up from the Eagles two spots in front of the Eagles to get Dalvin Cook.
Okay. So here we go.
Destroyed a lot of people that night.
We're talking about... as a reminder, the Eagles traded back in the next draft.
2018.
Yeah, after they won the Super Bowl,
yes.
Traded back. Lamar Jackson's the selection. You take Dallas Goedert, right? So.
Talent. Do you take Lamar Jackson if he's there just because?
Well, let's explore what could have happened in 2017
all right,
first.
All right, let's go there. All right.
The number 19 selection.
Number 19 selection, 2017, Derek Barnett at 14.
14 or 16, okay. Wherever he was. Yeah, right. I think it was 14. I can't remember.
All right. You go do that. Derek Barnett.
No, I got it.
I got Derek Barnett.
He's the number 14. You were right about that. I got him.
Okay.
Okay, so number 19, O.J. Howard, both a tight end and a deep threat, I would argue.
Who I liked and thought that they would go at that point, but I wasn't mad when he went defensive end. Is he better than Dallas Goedert?
Is he better than Dallas Goedert? Now, great question.
He's a weapon.
He's definitely a weapon.
A weapon.
Two more tight ends went in the first round. Evan Engram, who I would also argue is at least a semi-weapon, right, for the Giants? At least a semi-weapon.
30-something catches, I think, already.
Yeah. And David Njoku, who, less of a weapon.
Hurt right now.
Has some stuff, though.
But has things.
Right? Okay, so those are the tight ends, okay? And that's not counting Gerald Everett, who's been a useful tight end. He was selected number 44
last week.
One selection after Sidney Jones. Adam Shaheen hasn't done a whole lot. But there's that that George Kittle fellow, round 5, 146.
Yeah, he's not bad.
He works out. Let's get to the good stuff, though. The wide receivers. Gone at this point. Corey Davis, great deep threat. Mike Williams, good deep threat. And John Ross. Zay Jones, I don't blame you. Zay Jones went kind of crazy. He doesn't like wearing clothes in Buffalo, stuff like that. I hope that he's getting some help and everything else. I don't mean to make light of that. It's just, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Curtis Samuel, 40th overall.
Not bad.
Some speed.
Yeah. 49ers have a nice thing going on.
Yeah. I heard that this guy was slow, except he just keeps scoring 90-yard touchdowns. How about that?
Panthers, sorry. I meant.
Yeah. I got you. I knew what you meant.
Sorry about that. Thank you.
How about that Juju Smith-Schuster? We heard that he's slow. He just keeps scoring like 90-yard touchdowns, 80-yard touchdowns, stuff like that.
He has pizza commercials as well.
That is the truth. And plays Fortnite.
He plays Fortnite.
Cooper Kupp.
Oh, man.
Got some speed.
Is he Eastern Washington product?
Yes. Third round, pick 69.
But remember, he had a lot of buzz.
A lot of buzz.
People liked him a lot.
They did like him a lot. So him dropping to the third round, we weren't quite sure where he would end up. A lot of buzz. Man, he's the best wide receiver on that team.
Yeah. Robert Woods
is
good.
They have a nice trio.
Cooper Kupp's doing it, though.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets really painful, right? Because we're getting at the tail end of the third round. And as a reminder, it's Derek Barnett
and Sidney Jones
in the first two rounds.
Okay, what's next for the Birds? What number?
The next Eagles selection?
What's their number in the third round? I have to give the player.
Hold on, let me go back and reorder this by pick number. So here we go.
I apologize.
No, come on. I'll do it for you. All right, so the Eagles made their next selection.
Right. Okay.
Let's see, they had 14?
Yes.
43?
43.
Oh, 99.
Okay. All
okay.
Right.
99. So this was the third round compensatory pick that they got.
Okay.
And it ended up being Rasul Douglas. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds really good.
Okay.
Three picks sooner than that was that dude Kenny Golladay, who is
the number one receiver.
Who's a dude, like a full on dude. And then we've got Dede Westbrook
still
in the fourth
weapon.
Round.
Still considered a weapon.
Deep threat, you'd say. Yes.
Speed.
Yeah, I forgot about this guy, of course. Third round pick number 84, Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin.
Penn State. Yeah. His dad will call into the station and tell you why the Eagles should take Chris Godwin. He wasn't wrong.
Mr. Godwin, you were right. That's absolutely correct. So
yes, he wasn't wrong. Tyler knew.
Yeah, Tyler saw it firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
Way more excited about him than Miles Sanders, yes.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Without doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys that I was more excited about Miles Sanders than that are either still in college or weren't NFL products.
Right. I gotcha. I understand. So, just for perspective, and that's not counting like fringe, like I think Ryan Switzer's turned into like a useful player.
Yes.
But that's not even counting those guys.
No.
That's the wide receiving group that you're looking at.
That's the wide receiving group.
That 2017 draft is just glorious talk show fodder. Jeez. I've got to say.
That the one that really hurts, too. Cooper Kupp
stings.
And Kenny Golladay. Not that you knew.
I told you before, I think Kenny Golladay, before he's done, he'll have a period where he's the top five receiver in the NFL. Like, yeah.
That's just good.
That one hurts.
By Detroit.
Yeah, that's good.
And guys, I know he's not a receiver, but the one that hurts me the most in that draft is Sidney Jones's fellow Pac-12 defensive back who went 13 picks later to the Dallas Cowboys, Chidobe Awuzie.
Oh, Awuzie.
That hurts so much.
Yeah.
I loved him.
And remember at that time, it was Awuzie. Tease Tabor was around there.
Tease Tabor was highly sought after.
Which one went to the Colts? I can't remember.
Quincy Wilson.
Yes.
So, man, what a freaking pull.
So all of the...
At 11-20.
Great job. All of them were bunched up. And Awuzie, as you said, went 13 picks later.
Yeah.
But Quincy Wilson went maybe 7 later. Tease Tabor then went a little bit later on.
I remember watching this draft.
Because
dude.
Those corners were available, and that's why people went... We were on the Sidney Jones part because, he's going to recover from the Achilles. You have three healthy corners right there in the same range. Why not take one of them was the question. And they turned out, at least right now, people have given up on Sidney Jones, that they were right.
Yeah, I've given up on Sidney Jones.
Okay, then people were right.
And Doug Peterson coming out and being like, sometimes you got to play through some stuff. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that.
You're setting the table for this guy either getting IR'd or released.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that.
I remember covering this draft. I was there with a couple people who aren't at the station anymore. At the time, I was like,
was that the one downtown?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it was. Okay. I was like, this is not a big deal, this draft. Like, I'm like, Myles Garrett's a good player. Was not super excited about Mitchell Trubisky, who's the consensus top quarterback in that draft. It wouldn't have been mine, but my guy's still not the top quarterback in that draft, Deshaun Watson.
Myles Garrett is a really good player.
Really good player. But I'm like, Solomon Thomas is going to be nice.
I thought he would be better.
I thought he'd be better.
Yes.
Leonard Fournette, never really liked.
I did. I still do.
And then Corey Davis, Mike Williams, whatever, Christian McCaffrey. I'm like, there's some stuff here. This draft ends up being insane, the 2017 draft.
And you come out with Derek Barnett, Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas.
Mac Hollins?
He likes special teams more than playing wide receiver.
He does. Remember that? Shelton Gibson. Yeah.
Donald Pumphrey was...
Don't forget Elijah Qualls. Nate Gary.
Defensive tackle. Linebacker. Yeah. He's
with Nate Gary might be the most productive one out of all of them.
Yeah.
Is he more productive than Barnett? It's either him or Barnett. They're like right there. Right?
Yes.
It might be Douglas.
And Corey, Corey Clement, the undrafted free agent. But in terms of the draft,
yeah,
it's a bad miss in a kick-ass draft.
Yeah.
This is really, really rough.
And there's a lot of stuff that you just read off wide receiver-wise.
We ignored them. We were talking about defensive players. We were talking about running backs before. There are good players everywhere that the Eagles missed.
Cooper Kupp.
Oh, man.
Galladay. And the crazy part is the Eagles just won a Super Bowl.
Just won a Super Bowl.
And it's not good enough. No.
Maybe if people were less worried about writing books and stuff and more worried about doing their research ahead of the draft, we would have been okay.
610-632. Go Douglas Howie Roseman. Do something.
I'm just saying. 0975. It's Devon Givens and Joe Torti. End up with Matt Collins and Shelton Gibson in this class. You got to do it on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Man, we're watching the baseball stuff.
Yeah, mention it.
Gerrit Cole, 25 strikeouts in his last two starts. It's right there with Bob Gibson. 27. And he's tied with Mike Mussina.
Who was really good at that
really
time.
Good. The Moose.
Yes.
I saw that Tom Brady passed Peyton Manning in second all-time in passing yardage. Is that right?
There you go. Second all-time in passing yardage. Yep.
I didn't know he was even close, but then I was like, wow, he's been playing for a lot longer than... Like, Manning's been retired for a while now. That was one of those records where I was like, oh, Peyton's going to hold that for a little bit. Nope. Brady's coming for him.
Yes.
And got it today.
Yes. They're good.
Yeah. They're
pretty good. He's pretty good.
Their defense is nuts. Eagles. The Patriots' defense is outrageous.
Eagles play them after the bye Sunday, November 17th.
Okay. Are they going to be ready by then?
I hope so. Because after that is the Seattle Seahawks, I believe, yes. And then you have that five-game stretch that we spoke about earlier, Miami, New York, Washington, Dallas, New York again.
A little bit of a break. Hey, or
you close out the five games, and you hope to, of course, close things out where you're in a position now where you're talking 10, 11 wins, hopefully. Right now they're 3-2.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking about the six-game stretch. So...
It's going to be rough.
You can't go 2-4 or something like that. You have to go 3-3, 4-2, 5-1.
You have to survive.
So let's say you get the 3, right? You get 3-3. 6-game stretches ending with Seattle. You have those final 5 games, Joe. You have to win 4 of those 5, considering Dallas is one of those final games. Now, with Dallas being one of those final games... I don't think they're going to get swept by Dallas. They're going to split one of them. We're still talking 10 wins.
I mean, that's a season good enough to get you in.
Yes.
Right? And that's what we talked about at the beginning of the show should be the objective at this point. Is you got to get in.
So we're probably talking 10 or 11 wins for the Philadelphia Eagles. Right on par with a lot of what people were saying. 11, 12 wins for this football team.
Hmm.
Right?
I mean, if you drop a win, then it's not a disappointing season, right? Like, yeah. If you're projected at 11 and you get 10, it's not a disaster.
And you hate to jump when they have a tough game already against Minnesota coming up. You hate to jump to say, let's look at the six-game window that we're speaking about. But it's now about the six-game window and then the final five games of the season.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. But the thing is, too, that you'd expect... that if they had to, they can answer the bell in the last, you know, five games of the season. The question is, are they going to be in position to do that after these six games? Because like you were saying, you got to be 3-3 or 4-2.
Yes.
Or else you're in a position where it's like you're chasing it.
Yeah. Because right now, they're not going to go 0-6 as we talk about this, correct? They're not going to go 0-6.
No, we think that we're not going to see that.
So
yeah.
Let's assume they win those last five. That's 8-8. That's not good enough. That's not going to help.
No. No, that's the truth. That's not good enough.
Yeah. They're going to be a double-digit win team still. How do they get there?
Right. The eye test matters. How you're playing at the end matters.
Starts this weekend.
Positive momentum.
Starts this weekend. You have a two-game winning streak. You have something to feel good about, but you can be better.
Right. Yeah. Can be better. And they like, that's why I said, I was talking to D about it on Monday. I thought that was the perfect way for them to win that game. Because you didn't steamroll the Jets. You're not smelling yourself going into the Vikings game. Like, your defense did what they were supposed to do. They unlocked a little bit on that defensive line. That's an understatement. I mean, you get 10 sacks. It's crazy. But I thought that if they would have steamrolled the Jets, I would feel a lot worse than I do now about Houston. Or about Houston. About Minnesota. So I just don't feel good about that game.
So
now.
You don't feel as bad, even though it was a blowout. It was a rout. Defense gives you two scores, they give you 14 points.
Your offense looked bad, Doug.
Offense looked bad. You're still okay.
That makes me feel better. Ebbs and flows wise.
Yeah, there's improvement that can be had.
Yeah. And Doug can be on him.
And Doug can be on him.
I don't know how well Doug does at tipping points, you know, like where it could go either way. I think Doug is good at both ends. I think he's good at dragging a team up that's struggling. And getting them together, and we better figure this bleep out, and all that other kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I think that
was the cut, right?
I think he's good.
Audio.
Yeah, I think he's good there, and I think he's really good at keeping momentum going.
Uh huh.
The one question I have about Doug is when the season's hanging in the balance, you win this game, you're going one way. You lose this game, you're in trouble. I don't know how well he does in those spots. So. Like, this is kind of what you're facing here. We're going to get more information about who Doug is as a coach in this next six games. Certainly this next three games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really long road trip for them. I think it's been since like 2017 they haven't been on the road this long. Mm-hmm. Might even be longer than that, but that's the number that sticks out in my head. Like, that is a little bit of the book that we haven't seen or that we haven't yet read on Doug. And I'm fascinated to see how he and the team respond. That's why I thought that the Jets game in particular, seeing the offense struggle, he can be on them and not just be like, oh, well, you know, you beat up on a bad team you're supposed to.
I didn't think about that. You're right. You can look at the film certainly and say, hey, guys, offense, you only gave us 17.
Right.
Defense saved your butt. And that was a bad football team. You won 17-6. Essentially, and it should have been way more than that because you should have performed better. So let's go look at some things that we need to improve on. And now Darren Sproles is hurt. He could potentially be out for a little bit. And now you're starting to lean more towards Jordan Howard. Are you finally coming to an identity of this football team on the offensive side? Because the passing game, while it will work, you don't have the speed of DeSean Jackson. So you are going to lean on the run game. You're going to go to Zach Ertz when you need to go to Zach Ertz. And we're not going to complain about it anymore as a fans and as media maybe, because he's not taking the hits. He's getting the ball out. The chain is moving. You are getting positive plays out of everything.
Right.
So right now they might not be an explosive offense like we think they should be, but they still have enough talent. It's a matter of, how do you score with the run game? Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, do they get it done? And how healthy is Alshon Jeffery to be that
question?
That number one receiver that you spoke about with the guys earlier. How big is that number one receiver in terms of his health? And what do you get from the other guys? Nelson Agholor, we keep talking about, has the speed.
Yeah.
Can't catch.
Not consistently.
Not consistently.
Not enough.
That's not gonna help you in any way that you can't catch. Consistently.
610-632-0975. Yeah, because we've seen some guys who can't. Some guys who just straight up can't get it done. The other half of it, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say this because people called in and talked about it. You do get two fewer opportunities to get your offense out on the field when you're scoring defensive touchdowns.
Right.
My answer to that is you're playing the New York Jets. We heard that they're a garbage donkey team this entire week, and you're going to say that you need two more possessions to score 20 points on the Jets?
No, you don't.
Come on, man.
No, you don't.
Take care of what you're supposed to be doing.
You do that in your sleep.
That's it. If they're this bad, then you should be taking care of that, like you said, in your sleep.
Defense is creating turnovers just as much as the offense kind of ramps up the defense sometimes. Mm-hmm. You get excited. You should get excited from what they're doing as well and helping put some points on the board because they don't get that opportunity. The offense is the one that scores. Now, Brian did bring up something, Westbrook.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you are a offensive player and the defense is on the field, they get a stop, a score, turnover and a score. It's not that it's deflating, but it can do something to the offense because they're sitting too long because now you're – all right, the defense has already been on the field for however long they were on there. They get the score. They score the touchdown.
Mm.
Then they're back on the field. So the offense is sitting for quite some time. So maybe it's tough to get back
in the rhythm
of the play.
Makes sense.
Makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does.
I mean, obviously it makes sense. I mean, they've been through it.
They've lived it, yeah.
B is talking about it. He had to sit through there. He and Trey were talking about it on Monday. It was an interesting way of looking at the offense needing to get going. So that's something, but they have a better team that they're playing against this week coming up with the Minnesota Vikings, who have a lot. You don't, Joe, want to lose another conference game, especially against another team that we're looking at as a potential playoff team in the conference. You don't want to lose to Minnesota after losing to Detroit and Atlanta. Not that they are two threats for the playoffs, but in terms of your record and the seeding as we talk about, that's where it comes back into play.
What's the biggest concern for you when you look at the Minnesota game and what the matchup is? Like, what is it that you're most concerned about?
The running game sets the tone. The Eagles have been very good at stopping the run.
Mm-hmm.
They've been great at stopping the run. Now, we know they don't stop the pass, so they're last in pass defense and how much they give up. They give up the most yards pass-wise because the corners have been so bad, so you can take advantage of it. But they haven't faced Dalvin Cook. And
right.
If Dalvin Cook gets it going, and we say what you want about Kirk Cousins, and we know Kirk Cousins will give you the football. Kirk Cousins has had his days, though, when he was with Washington, where he looked pretty good against the Eagles.
Eagles couldn't beat him. Eagles couldn't beat Washington most of Kirk Cousins' Washington tenure.
So my fear is you cannot get the running game going. And, I mean, they get the running game going. You can't stop it. He's going off. That creates play-action opportunities. The two wide receivers, as we already know, are very good.
Yes.
And then they get into a rhythm, and it could be a long afternoon. My fear.
I know that I'll share what the other fears were during All-Star Day that people were asking about and why I'm not nearly as concerned about some of those other matchups that they were talking about. But yours, totally good one, especially considering the fact that they ran for a million yards on Atlanta and Kirk Cousins won. They threw the ball 8 times.
Was this the one they went over 200 or the one that they had 170? So, yeah, pick one.
Yeah, which time?
Pick one.
You want to run in the Gritty 5K? The race is this Sunday at 8 a.m. the Wells Fargo Center. The website for registration and information on the Gritty 5K is www.philadelphiaflyers.com/Gritty5K. Your complimentary coupon code is TheFanatic2019. The Gritty 5K is driven by AAA and benefits Flyers charities. 97.5 The Fanatic will be on site, so go to www.philadelphiaflyers.com/Gritty5K now to reserve your spot. It's Devon Givens, it's Joe Torti. Final segment coming up on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back to Von Gibbons, Joe Torty, 97.5, The Fanatic. Final segment of the program. Of course, we have one more thing that we'll be getting to in a matter of moments.
Yeah.
And more phone calls as well. Lots of good stuff that we've got going on here.
Yeah, I'm trying to see.
Checking something out?
Yeah, we were talking about it, you and I.
Chapter 2.
Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Running time. I would just want to see the running time of the movie.
Uh-huh.
A lot.
Was that?
250. Oh, yeah. It's a long movie.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's...
250. Yeah. I was just telling Joe that as soon as you walked out, we were talking about it's 250.
That's a long movie.
That's quite a bit. Eh.
There were exceptions that I would have made. I said, like, Avengers... Tyler and I had a discussion about this, that Avengers Endgame could be as long as it wanted to be.
Yes.
Because I think for a lot of people, they're going to be done with the MCU after that. Like, I think that's, like, an ending kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It takes something pretty special for me to watch a three-hour movie. Chapter 2 is not the one. I'm sorry. That's just not it.
How about they had a $79 million budget? $423.7 million.
They did okay.
They did pretty good.
They call that ROI.
Yeah, that's pretty good percentage-wise, I have to say.
Oh,
really,
man.
Really good stuff. Let's go to David and Sewell on 97.5, The Fanatic. What's up, David?
Hey, guys.
What's up, Dave?
I wanted to get into and Joe in particular was talking this week about the discipline of the Eagles offense. I want to talk a little bit about put a little bit things into perspective. We've all beaten up the whole drop passes and the injuries, but just would you agree though that between the passes and drop, and especially more so even just in the injuries, considering you haven't had Deshaun Jackson but for one game. And not counting the 9 snaps that Goddard had in his one game back, you basically missed him and Jeffries along with Deshaun Jackson for 3 games. That had a significant effect on the passing offense and the offense overall, as far as they have more touchdowns, be scoring more, be that and the drop touchdown passes. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree.
I absolutely agree.
Right.
And those are things that not every offense. Unless you know, I've looked at every team. But most of the other offenses, you know, they've had injuries, but haven't had it to that extent, and haven't had like a drop pass because the Eagles are way in front of that. Okay, all right. That is why.
Well, I mean, the drop passes are under your control, right?
Yeah, they're under your control, but they're not under the quarterback's control, and they're not under the control of the offensive coaching. Okay, they can put a guy in a position to be streaking down the field.
Yeah, Aguilar.
If the guy doesn't catch it.
Yeah, Aguilar and Ortega Whiteside are the two that really stand out. Yes.
So considering that would probably that's put a drag on the Eagles offense and the Eagles passing offense in particular, they've had as many offensive touchdowns this point as Kansas City. And this is taking out, you know, interception returns and fumble returns as New England. I think the team that's ahead, is like Baltimore.
For the most touchdowns scored, you're saying?
Yeah. And as far as the game against the Jets, I also want to put something else in perspective. Think of a stretch of 5 drives in a row with 4 punts and the fifth one, a successful field goal. And in those 5 drives, you have 25 plays for a total of 68 yards total in those 5 drives. I count the field goal in those drives because the field goal came after a drive of 5 plays minus 2 yards. And to tell you who I'm talking about and whether it's apples to apples, it was against the same backup quarterback the Eagles played. It was the week before. And I don't know, what was the guy's name, a quarterback that day against the Jets? Oh, some guy named Tom something or other. I don't think he plays up in New England.
Right. Well, okay. So here's what I would say, David. Here's what I would say. I would say that the Patriots offense is not asked to do nearly as much as the Eagles offense is going to be asked to do because the Patriots defense is otherworldly and the Eagles defense is bad. So what are you saying?
I'm just saying it happens. The Jets aren't, the defense is not a dull defense for the Jets. They have to, considering they're under the pressure of that offense that they play with. And that point is,
you think the Patriots defense is not great?
Bad, and when you play a team that bad, you're not going to necessarily be at your top when you're playing a team that. Now, if anything, being as a division opponent, New England would have less aptitude to take a Jets team for granted or play a little less sharp than an Eagles team who's playing out of conference. But the point I'm making is not. I'm just saying we look at what's happening in our city and with our team, and we don't take the perspective of, hey, this is not the first time these things have happened.
David, I'm sorry. You've gone on forever, man.
We know those things.
We know that. You're not breaking new ground. What I'm saying is the problem that occurred last year was that the offense didn't have flow and was a disappointing offense when you didn't have a deep threat. So the fact that you only get one and you have no contingency plan for the fact that this guy always gets hurt is a problem.
That's a good point.
I'm not blaming Carson Wentz or Doug Peterson.
Or Deshaun Jackson. He is who he is. He gets hurt.
That's just what it is.
He's out there. He's dynamic, and he does things for your offense.
That's it.
Why don't you have a second in the event that he is not available, considering that he does have this health issue?
That's exactly it. Let's go to Stu and Delco next on The Fanatic. What's up, Stu?
Yo, folks. What's going on?
How you doing, man?
I'm out of loss for words right here, because what you just mentioned was the fact of we not having explosive players and having a extra explosive player. Like, those guys are kind of hard to come by, man. We hadn't had an explosive player since Deshaun left, and those players are just hard to find. Look at New England. They're struggling to find an explosive player. That's the problem with our offense right now. They're the lack of explosion and 20-plus yard plays. The only player that's actually been giving us 20-plus yard plays is Miles Sanders coming out of the backfield.
So how come the Rams and the Chiefs can find multiple players like that?
If you look at the Rams and the Chiefs, first of all, the Rams haven't been playing that well as far as explosive play. They've been throwing the Cooper Kupp most of the time.
Well, I think that's because a lot of Jared Goff not being that good. He's just missing guys. They've been open.
Yeah, but you're looking at the Chiefs as just one team. I think if you look at the league as a whole, it's hard finding an explosive player and then putting them into the offense. I mean, their main explosive player, really, Tyreek Hill, is out. And they've been struggling. It's just hard to find the guy that you would trust making explosive plays.
Well, I hear you. I agree. But I think that it's always been important for Andy Reid to try to find and identify those guys. The Chiefs have six. They have six guys that you would consider to be explosive players. That's a lot.
Okay.
Like, they got DeMarcus Robinson, they got Sammy Watkins, they got Mecole Hardman, they got DeAnthony Thomas, and that guy Byron Pringle was going all over the place. Like, and that's not including Tyreek Hill. That's six, just the wide receivers. You know what I mean? Like, they are hard to find, but if you try, sorry, man, you're getting loud there. I don't know if you got the window down or what.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you try, you can do it.
A little bit.
All right. We'll save one more thing for another day.
You sure?
Okay. Yeah, we got to get out of here.
I hear you.
You know,
happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to everybody. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tyler Zuli. Outstanding job producing. Everybody who called and tweeted in really enjoyed the discussion tonight. So thank you guys very much. Devon, you're back on the airwaves tomorrow solo.
Yes, I'm doing a wraparound Sixers in Charlotte. So, yes, Ty back?
Yeah, I'll be with you.
All right. Oh, nice. So not solo. All right.
Let me rephrase that. I'm producing the game, so I'll be in the air. Okay.
He'll be physically right under the roof.
He'll nice be around.
Job. All right. So we'll talk to you guys later. Fanatic at 5 is coming up after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.